Triple M Footy is the number one football call on radio.
Footy's on the radio.
And your front row. Welcome to the Sunday Rub.
For McDonald's Gourmet Creations.
Triple M rocks footy.
Oh, this is a massive Sunday Rub coming your way. We're at the Triple MCG, Melbourne take on Carlton later on this afternoon. Before that, though, we are action-packed with guests. Tom Lynch from the Adelaide Crows will join us. Brendan Bolton, coach of the Carlton Football Club. Bernie Vince, not playing today from the Melbourne Footy Club. He'll be up here. We're doing a bit of story time with Roozy, which I'm looking forward to. A couple of new segments to get through. So much to get through today. And I look to my left and this man, just a superstar of football in general. Wayne Schwosh is here. Hello, Schwatter.
Hello, Howie. And looking forward to seeing how the Demons go about their business against Carlton today. But fair to say, I spent 12 hours in transit interstate yesterday, and I feel like I can't get those hours back. Due to a really, really disappointing performance by an interstate team that should be playing much better footy.
Yeah, we'll get on to the Gold Coast Suns very shortly. I'm just getting used to working with this man when he starts sending me text messages at 6:45 this morning with what he wants to get through. Jay Clark, Triple M Zone. Hello, Clark.
Hello, Howie. Some big injury news breaking, and we'll get to that in a second. But I reckon Melbourne fans come to the MCG with a spring in their step, because you think that maybe Carlton has the younger side today, fellas. Well, I'll tell you what, Melbourne has got 12 players today with under 50 games versus Carlton, who only has 10 players with under 50 games. In terms of the average games played, Melbourne is younger, with an average of 70 games per player. So they are younger, Roozy. You've done a great job, and I think they're in for a big win over Carlton today.
And talking about Roozy, from what I heard last week, these two were a bit of a back row combination, like maybe McGrath and Warne. I'm going to go with Paul Roos as the Glenn McGrath, because he's more straight and consistent, I would have thought. Hello, Roozy.
How are you, mate?
Great to see you.
I was worried where that was going then for a minute.
Well, it was only going one way, and that was comparing Duck to Warnie. Hello, Ducko.
I want to be Warnie.
How are you, mate?
Yeah, very good. Good to be here. And just on, obviously, big game today. Looking forward to this one. They've won 9 of their last 10 against Melbourne, Carlton. And let's be honest, the Blues haven't been a great side for a little while. So there just seems to be it's another little hurdle that Melbourne have to jump. They jumped one last week. They get an opportunity today. And we'll sort of see how far they've come after another pre-season, Roozy, under the belt. And it's amazing, and you would know this, and Schwatter, it's amazing what one pre-season does. So you finish last year, then you get another good, solid pre-season into these kids, and we'll just see how much they've improved, Schwatter.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was interesting talking. Watsy was quoted during the week, I think, or the week before, just how much more prepared they are. And that's the thing, when you're trying to build a team, build a club, build a game plan, I think there's this misconception that it happens overnight. I mean, Bulldogs were fantastic last year, but it was on the back of, even if you go back to Rocket, they played in two preliminary finals. They've still got some experience. Brendan McCartney comes in, teaches them how to win contested football, teach them how to tackle. So you're right. I think that's the thing about today I'm looking most forward to. They looked a lot more prepared last week, Melbourne, after that extra pre-season. And I completely agree, Duck. I think today's a bit about the progression. And I'm glad you mentioned it, Jay-Z, because sometimes you can get caught up in an age thing. And Melbourne, and it was only when I got reminded late last year how young Melbourne are. I think it was the same when we played Carlton last year. So things can change reasonably quickly either way, because even if you look at the ages, the average, there's not a massive difference between oldest and youngest. It's sort of a year and a half type thing. So, you add a couple of older players in, you take a few out. So Melbourne are a really young team. Bernie Vince is out today, you mentioned, and I thought he was outstanding last week. Jordan Lewis came in, had some experience. He was outstanding as well. I'm looking forward to today's game, because I thought Carlton were okay last week as well.
Jay-Z, I get a text from you this morning, 6:42 a.m. Topic 1, Gold Coast Suns / Rocket / Gazza.
We were having an early chat, and the Suns are a big worry, fellas, for the AFL at the moment. They were belted by 100 points by GWS yesterday, and it just seemed like the effort involved, they were out of the contest early, and they did look quite listless to me. And you sort of look at it and you think, well, all these good players have left the club recently, and now there's a big question mark over Rocket Ead as well, because he's out of contract at the end of the year, and you just wonder whether he's the man to take this group forward, because Tony Cochran, the president, he said that this is the year that they must go forward, and it's a really slow start for the footy club and a huge concern for the AFL, because they're looking shocking. They've got a microscope on footy in Queensland at the moment.
Here is Rodney Eade after the game yesterday against the GWS.
They do care whether they are a quiet group, whether we've gone too far as young. The young players we've got are, even the ones in the seconds, are fairly quiet guys, and they, at this stage of their careers, probably sheep to a degree. So whether that manifests itself out, do people think they don't care? I know they do care, but it's the confidence has sort of actually come out of the balloon at the moment. We've got to reinforce it.
Reading a tweet this morning about the Gold Coast Suns, gifting early draft picks doesn't guarantee success. No leaders, no depth, no spirit, no intent yesterday. Hashtag poor, and that came from at Wayne Schwoss.
It did, because I flew up and called this game, and I was keen to see how Gold Coast and the Giants would go, because both teams were pretty disappointing the week before. But 7 minutes in, they were inept. 7 minutes in, there seemed to be, and it's easy for us to sit up at an elevated position and go, well, they don't care, but there was no spirit. There was no commitment for a contest. And the thing that I look for is when a team's under pressure, who's the animated players? Who's giving instruction? Who's directing players with regards to where do we need to set up? What do we need to do? I'd go further than that, having had the benefit of 12 hours to think about what I saw yesterday and what I tweeted this morning. I didn't see a game plan. I didn't see any structure from 7 minutes on throughout the course of the game, albeit for the final three goals in the second quarter and the first two in the third quarter, margin back to 22. So in the space of a quarter and a half, the margin blew out to 100 points. The players have to shoulder some responsibility. The coach, some responsibility. But where I think that I have a bigger problem with what's happened at the Gold Coast, they've been gifted significant concessional picks for a number of years, and I understand the reason for that. But just because you give a number of early round draft picks over successive years to a football club, if you don't get those decisions right as to who you recruit with regards to young talent coming in, and you complement that with experienced players and in particular leaders from other clubs, you've got a problem. I've written five names that are off the top of my head. Mumford, Ward, Short, Stevie Johnson and Phil Davis. And I'm missing a couple of other players. Ryan Griffin is a quieter player. The Giants went and got legitimate players with great experience and they are on-field leaders. When it was going horribly bad yesterday for the Gold Coast Suns, there was none. There was not one player.
So Gary Ablett had one possession in the first quarter. What was your take on his effort throughout that part?
Again, this is from afar, but body language was really poor for Gary. He's been a great player, but right now they need him to be a leader. And they need him to be a leader in the sense of sacrificing what he would like to do individually. And I've got no doubt Gary's one of these players that still believes that he's one of the best players in the competition. As you get older, the challenge you've got is you've got to come to terms and accept, I'm not the player that I used to be. So what's the best thing I can do for my team? I can lead by example. I can be vocal. I can show by the way that I'm going about what I'm doing, I still value being a part of this football team. What I saw from afar yesterday was a guy who was filthy. He wasn't being played where he wanted to play.
Mm. I think the fascinating thing, and you touched on a bit of it, Swat, it's not that simple to put a team together. You know, and I think there's some real discussion around these two expansion teams, and I think even when the Suns got put together, there's too much. Yeah, I think a couple of recruiters, and I can't remember exactly the names, and Matty Rendell might have been one, but Matty, if it wasn't you, I don't put words in your mouth. They will win a premiership within 3 or 4 years. That was, Jay-Z, that was a little bit of the discussion around. There's too much. But what you said is exactly right. You can't expect to put a group of kids together and expect them to grow and win, because if they don't have role models, it's extremely, extremely hard to do. So your initial period of putting the team together, you're trying to get guys coming in. Now, whether Gary's the right person as captain, Duck and I, probably not, I don't think, but it's still an amazing coup for that football club, an amazing coup to get Gary Ablett to that football club. 2.5 years ago, they were 7-3, okay, under Bluey McKenna. So things were starting to go pretty well. Yeah, the younger players are getting a little bit older, Swatter. I think Gary was the best player in the competition. There's two ways to lead. Yeah, there's to get out onto the field and just be Gary Ablett. Probably the more modern way, Duck, of being a captain now, yep, is to lead in the sheds, to lead in the meetings, to when things aren't going. I don't think that's Gary. Now, this is not a criticism of Gary Ablett. Gary is a captain by being the best player in the competition.
That's exactly right.
So what happens then? Gary gets injured around that period. They look like they're going to break through the hump as a team, and then the whole thing falls apart. The Giants get through that hump, add Shaw, add Mumford, add Griffin. They're through the hump. All the young kids are excited. They then play in the preliminary final last year. So I don't think you can underestimate that injury on that football club at that particular time. Since then, Bennell's left, Prestia's left, Caddy's left, and there's probably a number of others that I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, they sacked the coach. You make a good point, throwing a group of young kids together on the Gold Coast. The Gold Coast has been the Bermuda Triangle for every sporting club, whether it be rugby, basketball, whatever has gone up there, has not worked. They walk around in the middle of the day with their board shorts on like they're on a holiday. It is just a completely different feel up there. And you throw young kids up there, Howie, I think that there has to be something said about that. So therefore, even more important to get back to Schwatter and your point, Roosie, is the leadership and to have really strong leaders at your club, which they clearly didn't have. And your point on Gaz is exactly right. He's clearly the best player. He's arguably the best player of the last 15 years. But he, in terms of training and going and having your eyes buffed, his preparation for him, Schwatter, is apparently faultless for him. Mm. Does it by himself, doesn't necessarily, didn't go to all the sessions. Yeah, all of that sort of stuff, wasn't on the track a lot with training, but certainly played like no one else. So it's, you're right, different type of leader. What the Gold Coast probably needed was someone more like the leaders of now.
Yep. I think on-ground leaders and extensions of the coach for Gold Coast, for Brisbane, for Sydney, GWS, are even more important than they are for teams here in Melbourne, South Australia and WA. And I felt this as a player at Sydney. When you're in those northern states, you aren't subjected to the intense scrutiny and pressure that the footballing media apply on all the Melbourne teams and by extension Adelaide and WA. So as a young group of players, you can escape that to some degree, Roosie. You're not held to the same high level of accountability, not only within a club, but by the footballing media, because the attention isn't there. So a really bad performance like yesterday, well, it's bad, but it's only dealt internally. You don't have to then go through 7 days of intense or 5 days of intense scrutiny by the media. And I think sometimes that gives players an out. It's a bad performance, but it's not given the same attention that it should be. And that's where those on-ground leaders, Shaw, Mumford, Stevie J, are really important for a coach like Leon Cameron to make sure the standards and the values, not only during a 2.5 hour game, but for the following few days until we get ready for another game of football, are held and held consistently.
You know what's important, Swatter? Because what the coach doesn't want us to be seen to be doing is smashing the players all the time. And this is Rocket's dilemma. Because if you're in Melbourne and you lose by 100 points, the bloke you're buying the paper off, you're smashing you. The bloke you're buying your chicken and salad roll, smashing you. The bloke that you're buying the flowers for your girlfriend on Valentine's Day, smashing you. If you're in Sydney and Brisbane, you're absolutely right. It is so difficult because it always comes back to that, the coach. If you have Stewie Maxfield, if you have Brett Kirk, if you have Jared McVeigh of recent times, Kieran Jack, et cetera, Joey Kenny, I suspect now, it's so much easier on the coach. So absolutely 100% correct.
Roosie, what about Gaz then? So would he appeal, and Duck as well, would he appeal to Geelong? So remember on the eve of the season, he said he doesn't know whether he wants to play beyond this year. You know, there was a real question mark on his future. He wanted to trade back to Geelong. Didn't happen. What do you think? Do you think he could come back to Geelong? Would that work?
Oh, look, I don't think Geelong would be looking to pick up Gary Ablett at 33 years of age. And given where he's at, I mean, it'd be, it'd be romantic for him to go back, but it'd be for far less money.
Yeah, he'd have to take a
massive pay cut. And the romantics would love it. And I guess there'd be an element of Geelong supporters that would, think that it was great. But I can't see it happening.
Well, hey,
if you bring him back,
I don't think Chris Scott would want.
Let's crystal ball it though. If he has a bad year and he plays predominantly inside forward 50. Would Geelong be getting him back to play in their midfield, which has the likes of the two Selwoods, Paddy Dangerfield?
Forward, wouldn't he?
But would he be happy with that? Because he's clearly not, based on two performances, he's not happy where he's being played at the moment.
I think the other thing about Gary, I reckon it's in some ways it's unfair to criticise Gary, because if we're clear on why they got him up there, he was captain.
Been a massive success.
He's been unbelievably successful. Unfortunately, he hurt his shoulder. So I think the problems are wider than Gary. Gary is Gary Ablett. He's an unbelievable player. He's not a vocal leader. He's not driving the culture from all accounts of that footy club. But let's be really clear. He's been exceptional for that club. I think the problems are deeper than Gary. The problems are around about the Mumford, Shaw, Griffin, all the guys that you've spoken about, and just that inability to get through that period. That's the question. I think Rockett's an experienced enough coach, hopefully, to be able to work their way through the situation. It's not going to be easy, but they need to work their way through it.
Tom Lynch from the Adelaide Crows is about to join us. But before that, Jay-Z, a little bit of breaking news about a big-name hawk.
Yeah, bad news for Grant Birchall. We see he made contact with Tom Lynch in the game yesterday. And he's going to be out for at least 1 month, fellas, possibly two, with a fractured jaw. So he's having surgery today. There might be a bit of plate work required there. So at least 1 month Birchall will be out for. That'll be Gold Coast games against Gold Coast, Geelong, West Coast and St Kilda, and possibly 2 months. So anytime between 4 to 8 weeks, Grant Birchall, very experienced player. They've already lost Lewis Mitchell, Brad Hill, as you mentioned before. So Birchall on the sidelines for quite some time, mate.
All right, Jay-Z, that's not good news for the Hawks. The coach, Alistair Clarkson, was very positive after the game, but not as positive as the Crows coach. The Crows 16-17, 113. The Hawks 13-11, 89. Our next guest, 31 disposals and a goal. Joining us from Adelaide, Tom Lynch. Hello, Lynchy.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, great to speak to you. A wonderful start to the season. Everyone was speaking about how good GWS were. You took care of them and then overcame a bit of a hoodoo against the Hawks. They'd had the wood over you for quite some time.
Yeah, and probably to start things off, probably not a great intro as well, hearing that I was the one that broke Grant's jaw. So hopefully he's all right. And I didn't even know it was that bad because he got up. He's a pretty tough player. So, it's been a great start. Obviously, last week was... It was great to get over, a favoured GWS, and then we haven't beaten the Hawks in a while, so it's always nice to beat them.
Tommy, just tell us about that incident. Can you explain what happened? Because the MRP will certainly look at it.
Yeah, look, I didn't even know it happened. We just both went for the ball, and he's obviously come off with a sore jaw, obviously. I can't really comment too much further than that because I was just going for the footy and. I didn't even know until you just told me then, so it's quite disappointing.
In that moment, did you check on the player? Did you say you're right, mate, or you just sort of kept moving on? I guess you didn't know.
Oh, yeah, look, as I just said, I went for the footy and so did he, and I knew we obviously collided because of the contact, but he got up, so at that stage you probably think he's okay, and it probably just shows how tough a player he really is.
Tommy, Paul Roos, mate, well done. I thought there was a couple of things that really stood out for me yesterday. The first quarter, they had 36 uncontested marks, and I suspect Pikey would have come in reasonably disappointed at quarter time. I mean, that was sort of their game plan as it's been the last 5 or 6 years. You cut them to 23 in the second quarter, then 9 and 7 in the third and fourth. Was that a real discussion point at quarter time?
Yeah, and it was before the game too, Ruthie. You let Hawthorn play like that, getting their uncontested marks and their mark change, you're going to be in for a long afternoon, so... 40s, way too high. 30s, even too high as well. So, where we had a focus to restrict them, and we were unable to do that in the first quarter. But to the boys' credit, we were able to really turn it around. It was touched on at quarter time again, but we spoke about it before the game, as I said. So it was about implementing it, and we were able to do that.
Yeah, it was really stark. When you were able to take that away from the last quarter. Look, the other thing I was really pleased with the Crows. I guess the evolution of a team is when they can start to win more than one way. So, I mean, last week we all did your game, and the pressure was probably a bit more in the box than there was from the Giants. There's more pressure from Duck on us at breakfast, to be honest, than there was from the Giants to you guys last week. So we were a little bit questioning. The merit of the win, not so much the merit of the win. What I was really pleased for you guys yesterday because I thought Hawthorn did a really good job, Lynchy, of taking away your run, and I felt you were able to win a different way. Your contested marking was exceptional. Some of your bigs, Jacobs, I thought was terrific. I thought Taylor Walker's effort to just play, and he looked a little bit underdone, but he played really, really well, I thought, as well. That must have been pleasing for Pikey as well after the game, just a different way to win the game.
Yeah, you're spot on. And I think it's pleasing for the players as well to know that, as you said, things weren't going as we would have planned early on in the game. That it was basically played on their terms. But we felt like if we got done what we needed to and on our focus areas going to the game, we'd be okay. So, the boys take a lot of confidence out of that. But as you said, it was Sammy Jakes was enormous yesterday. Tex was fantastic coming back into the side. And another one, Andy Otten. We took a little while to restructure after Josh went out. And that's on the players. We just lost a bit of our structure because he's so important to us. But once the coaches boxed through Andy forward, it really straightened us up again. And he competed really hard, brought the ball to ground for our smalls, and it had a huge impact on the game, I reckon.
Yeah, I thought Andy Ottens was terrific. Make a good point. Mate, I reckon you're playing a fantastic role for the game. The amount of times you get up in the wing, and I don't know whether you're invisible, but no one seems to find you. So, yeah, the way you link your whole team from defence to attack, mate, so terrific on that. But you're probably going to get a little clip from me when you're watching. I don't know whether you watch the review during the week with your coach, but just take me through it. I don't want to sort of revisit it too much, but I know you'd be a bit disappointed when Ruffy went to the front of the contest in the goal square and you sort of went to the back of the contest. Just take me through the mindset as you're running back to the centre bounce, just to give the listeners at home an understanding of, you know, when you've made a bit of a blue, what goes through your mind at that stage?
Yeah, certainly, and I've already had that clip already, so you are the coach coming out and you there. Yeah, obviously, yeah, that was poor on my front. You know, I've got to make sure I stay with him there. I probably anticipated probably too soon that I thought Dan Taylor actually marked the ball, but I've just got to be better in that instance. I mean, there's no real excuse for it or try to explain it. I've got to go with him, lock on, have a more defensive mindset than what I did. So, especially in that part of the ground, you can't really anticipate that or guess that Dan's marked the ball as I thought in the end. But, yeah, it's one of those ones where I'm sure I'll cop another lick from the coach too.
Wayne Carey is talking to Tom Lynch from the Adelaide Crows on the Sunday Rub.
Hey, Lynchy, if you're going to play in finals and get to the pointy end of finals, you need improvement from, you know, that middle tier younger group. And I just reckon Charlie Cameron's emergence, we watched him last week, he was very good. But yesterday, he still had his class, but he did a different way. And without even looking at the stats, I was obviously here, but I think he had 7 tackles. Rory Sloane had 16 tackles. Rory Sloane had more tackles than the 3 on-ballers. He had 8, actually. Charlie Cameron tackles. 9, was it? Sorry, I didn't see that finger there, Jay. but it's that side of him that I saw yesterday that I haven't seen before. He's really improved.
Yeah, he's ferocious, and you know, himself going up into the midfield this year has really provided a spark for us. And you know, we were really confident. We wanted to probably get him a bit more in there last year, but he had a sort of an interrupted second half of the pre-season, which probably limited him to maybe just staying forward. But you know, Mitch McGovern's another one who's really come on. And yesterday, his second half, he responded really well after a bit of a quiet first half and had an enormous role to play for us. Rory Atkins is another one. He's really stepped up his game. But, yeah, we've got a bit more speed in there. Between, you know, Rory, Wayne Miller and Charlie Cameron, we've been able to, you know, get a bit of aggression and class from those guys. So, you know, it's helping at the moment. Hopefully those guys continue their form.
Just on McGovern, pass this on for me. JB doing the game yesterday has nicknamed him Gecko. He reckons
Gecko.
He's got gecko hands, gecko fingers, real sticky fingers, he reckons. But he is an unbelievable mark. Just back to yourself, I thought you played a really, really important role yesterday. And we obviously did the game last week, and you're probably the only one that didn't get onto the gravy train last week and get a heap of the ball. But is your nickname, is it Link at the Adelaide Crows? Is that what they call you?
Sorry, I missed that second bit. But,
do they call you? Is it Link? Is that your nickname?
No, it's Lynch.
Lynch. Lynchpin. Well, that's what...
I don't have any... I mean, I play the high half-forward role where, you know, as you said, that's my role, to be the connection through the middle of the ground. But as you said, I it's funny, I didn't play any different to what I did the week before, but sometimes that's just how it goes. We played a little bit differently yesterday with our ball movement, and yesterday it was a bit more through me, through the middle of the ground. But, you know, I'm just one who's got to play their role within the team, and I'm going to have those weeks, I think, where I don't have as much impact, but, you know, I'm certainly looking to each week, you know, perform the best I can for the side.
Big game against the Power, Tommy, Saturday night, the showdown. But when Melbourne chased you a couple of years ago, Tommy, was it Paul Roos who jumped on the phone, or was it Toddy Viney? And how did you turn the great man down if he did come knocking?
Well, I think Paul said he wasn't going to coach there anymore, so
Is that why he didn't come? You're not a big fan of goodies. I got a great story about you too with Lewis Johnson, but that's another one where you've got Paul Lewis. Do you remember that when you got Louis Johnson into trouble when you spoke to he came and spoke to you half? I think you guys had finished your game, and we were playing after you, and Louis Johnson came up and spoke to you. And Rossi Lyon wasn't that happy. This one you're playing for St Kilda. I'll extrapolate that on later because it's a very good... You might even be aware of what happened, the consequences.
I don't even think I'm aware of the story, but...
You might be aware of the consequences for young Lewis Johnson, but he did come and interrupt Ross Lyon in a after-match huddle at the Adelaide Oval after you guys had played and we were playing a doubleheader after you. So I'll extrapolate on that later because it's a good story.
Yeah, that's another time.
Hey, Lynchy, just before we let you go, did you meet one of the great superstars of world sport over the off-season, NFL style?
A couple of years ago, Josh Jenkins and I were able to meet Tom Brady, which was incredible. So we were very lucky. And, I think we gave him a pep talk and he obviously was able to get it done in the end.
You didn't nick his jumper last year at the end of the NFL, did you?
No, that certainly wasn't us. But, we were very lucky to obviously meet him. And, I've not much more to say about that than it was pretty surreal.
Appreciate that, Tom. Have a wonderful season. Thanks for joining us, Tom Lynch
and
the Adelaide Crows.
I don't know if you realise this, boys, but we've got a premiership-winning coach in here, and it was just beautiful to watch him set him Tommy up with a clip by just giving him a nice little pat on the back and a little hug, and then came through with the whack. And you know what? Tommy answered it.
Yes.
Set him up with a little pat, Roosie, and then cut him down at the knee.
Not on fire at the moment, the Collingwood Football Club. They got beat round one by the Western Bulldogs. Then they went down to the Richmond Footy Club this Friday night. Incredibly, they take on Sydney, both sides looking for their first win. Roosie, you've come in with stats, which always impresses me, and a lot of them. Firstly, I want to know, did you compile them yourself?
I actually thought of them, and I asked the chairman just to confirm them with me.
Righto.
Now, look, I think, I mean, there's always going to be hysteria once we get to Sunday around the win-loss and et cetera, et cetera. I think what I like to do here is try and establish what a game style is that the premiership teams play, Duck, because regardless of whether you are in the, you know, Brendan Bolton's going to be setting his team up to play finals football, as is Fags, you know, Melbourne are now in that middle tier, Goody will be trying to get them to the next level. So when you're discussing Collingwood and there's going to be hysteria around, you know, Bucks, and I don't think that's relevant. I think what Collingwood fans want to see is a team playing the brand of football that can allow them to win a premiership. Now, the Richmond-Collingwood game on Thursday night, it was 58 tackles to 55. The reigning premiers versus the runner-up, 84 tackles to 74.
Wow.
Okay, so it's 113 tackles in one game and 158 tackles in the other game. So if you're trying to establish a game style. I'm not suggesting, if you're a young team, Duck, you're going to be lower on the tackles, and there's reasons for it. What I'm saying is, if you're trying to establish a game style, it has to be built around what the premiership teams do. And when I'm a little bit critical about Collingwood, it's more around their midfield brigade. Everyone said Treloar had a fantastic game. Now, offensively, I 100% agree. And I don't want to get on Treloar because I don't know what Bucks is telling his midfield to do. But the tackles in the midfield were Pendlebury 4, Treloar 2, Chris 1, and Sidebottom 1. Taylor Adams, who I rate really highly, has had 7. Okay, Hayward's played his first game for the Sydney Swans. He's had 6 tackles. Okay. Newman's played his first game for the Sydney Swans. He's had 6 tackles. Florence played his second game for the Sydney Swans. He's had 2 tackles, 29 pressure acts, and he's the second most for Sydney. Liberatore's had 16 tackles. McRae's had 8 tackles. Bonampelli's had 7 tackles. And John's had 7 tackles. So what I'm trying to say is, let's forget the hysteria around the coach, et cetera, et cetera. And there's obviously some issues around their kicking and so forth. But if I'm a Collingwood supporter, what I'm looking at the Bulldogs-Sydney game on the Friday night, and I'm saying, well, they're the premiers and they're the runners-up. I want my team to play like that. It'd be fair to the Tigers, who are involved in that contest. They've started to establish more of a brand with their forwards, Duck. You know, really good forward pressure. They're creating turnovers through the midfield. And I think at the end of the day, that's why they end up beating Collingwood.
I think the concern for the Pies, and Swatter, you brought it up before, is when I watch them, when their pressure's good, and I don't think their endeavour has been poor at all. I think they've brought up examples of tackling, and that's a good example. But generally, their effort has been there, but I don't look at them and say, what are they exactly trying to do? They clearly, to me, don't really have a plan. And when they set up defensively...
You don't think they have a plan? You don't think Collingwood has a plan?
I can't see an obvious plan that they're playing to, but... The worrying thing for me, and this was the worrying thing last year, they just get opened up. Once you get through them, you get through them, and you can score really, really quickly. And look, I don't know what Bucks has done, but the footy gods, I mean, how often does Fasolo miss easy goals like that? Moore miss one, Main miss one from 20 out directly in front. I mean, their kicking was deplorable, field kicking and also their goal.
And we know that in the modern game, I mean, there's going to be ebbs and flows. We saw it with poor St Kilda. I mean, the only stat that they need to worry about is goal kicking accuracy, because they should have won that game. And it is when you've got those that momentum, the momentum's going to shift. So if you don't take advantage of the momentum, I guess what I'm trying to establish is, what are you trying to build as a club? Now, your tackles are going to vary week to week, as everything else does. Goal kicking is a massive factor that we probably don't talk a lot about.
So why? That's exactly what I was going to ask you, Bruzy. Why is it, in this multi-million-dollar business that we're in, is there not a full-time goal kicking coach at every club, spending millions of dollars, and you have, you know, people sitting there punching out numbers on their computers, and their stat man, little geeks going bip bip bip, and yet we haven't
hello to Chew out there. We haven't got, as we speak.
But we haven't got goal kicking coaches at every club teaching them the most.
Although
important thing in our game is to put that ball through the big sticks.
I think the thing that we've
just
never
can't
been
do it.
Doing how to reproduce, and you guys played as well, is the crowd factor. I mean, that's the interesting thing is these guys do work on their techniques. You know, three steps, four steps, five steps, and all clubs. I would suspect that every player would have a goal kicking routine. But I think we saw Clokey. Did he put some headphones on? Was it last year, the year before, to analyse? I know if you talk about a lot of the great athletes now, Tiger Woods, Jason Day, they talk about visualisation. They talk about the ability to actually see the thing, which has got nothing to do with practice at all, Duck. It's actually seeing the ball go through. And if you look at
But that's the sort of stuff we did back in the 90s. Yeah. We were doing that sort of visualisation back then, Roosy. So why wouldn't they be still doing that now?
Well, I mean, I think that's the next stage of where sport's going to go, because you can only do so much kicking or marking or handballing or running, et cetera, et cetera. I'll tell you what, without getting too technical about the whole week, one of the biggest differences I noticed between when I coached Sydney and coached Melbourne is the Players Association. Mm. Players Association now, you have to have half a day education and a full day off a week. So you're preparing your team for 3.5 days. That's it. So you've got to fit everything in your week, meetings, weights, running, et cetera, et cetera. And I was actually quite staggered. It's very, very difficult with the constraints of the Players Association to get all these things done. So something has to miss out. And then what you don't want the players to be there from sort of 7 a.m. till 7 p.m. So that's one of the greatest restrictions for footy clubs now.
So if you were coaching any team right now, and over the first 2 weeks, goal kicking and inaccuracy in front of goals was your biggest issue, and you addressed that at your review meetings, and you felt as a senior coach, that's got to be our focus this week. Do you have the ability as a senior coach in 2017 to say, we're going to allocate 30 minutes? We normally don't do this, but we'll allocate 30 minutes twice a week to focus on an area we need to improve, because that's the biggest issue. Or is there a tug of war between what you want to achieve as a senior coach, but also what the conditioning team want to do from a preparation point of view?
Oh, I think you can now get it in. I mean, what you're trying to do with goal kicking more now is around your main sessions. You're trying to sort of say, yeah, we'll do it 15 minutes at the end, 15 minutes at the start. I think everyone acknowledges now with the demands of the game, the early parts of the week's around recovery, but you can still get, some skill in. What you can't do, Swatter, which is probably the most frustrating, you can't say to your group of forwards, guys, we're going to meet at Thursday at 9 o'clock, we're going to go down, we're going to do an extra session. They're going to say, well, it's a day off. We can't come down on our day off. That's where it becomes really, really difficult.
Roosie, interesting comments on Adam Treloar and his accountability, because up until now we've been hearing about, you know, he's shortening in the Brownlow medals. That's a really interesting take. But, Duck, what's your take on Darcy Moore? Because he's had a pretty slow start to the year. They come up to the SCG, a much smaller ground, more congestion this weekend. How do you think he's travelling? What's he got to do? Is he suffering or?
Yeah, look, it's not unlike Joe Danaher last year at the Bombers. You know, he just had no support, and all the ball is trying to go through a young forward still trying to find his way in AFL footy. And I think Darcy and you know, to be honest, I think Travis Cloke has certainly had an impact because he does draw other defenders, and he is there, so clearly he's a bigger option. And you've got Mayne and Jesse White and these guys, but they don't play like big forwards. They're like small forwards, really. They lead up the ground, and so there's a lot of pressure. I think there's a lot of pressure on the kid, and let's be honest, they've butchered the ball going forward. So it's a real shame. They've got it's really important, and I thought the same thing for Joe last year. Really important that they don't like really smash him, and don't, because they've got to protect him a little bit. They've got to make sure that he has the support. You could break him forever, Roosie,
if he
gets smacked week after week after week. And you're right, it's already been 2 weeks where it's been pretty lean for him.
I'm talking to Jonathan Brown and Lynchy the other night, and it's interesting, when they both came into them, they reminded me, when I first came in, I actually played full forward, and Bernie Quinlan was at centre forward. David McMahon was on a half forward flank. Mickey Conlon, Gary Wilson was in the pocket. Lynch, when he came in, Brownie came in to Lynch, Bradshaw. So you're coming in as the third, very much the third. Yeah, I'm not sure what your situation was, Duck. But what we're finding now with these young guys, and that's why I think it's easy in hindsight, but possibly Cloak, even for Darcy Moore's development, becomes a really, really important player for them. Mm. Now, he's not there now, but we're trying to remember whether, I think Moore kicked 5 against the Bulldogs. We're trying to remember whether actually Darcy played that day. But what you find now is you get a Darcy Moore, a Boyd when he comes in, Patton when they come in, you know, McCartan's probably getting a bit more help now, which is good. McCartan's a good example, because no one's really talking about McCartan as a number one draft, because you've got Josh Bruce there, Nick Riewoldt was there, Membry's doing a terrific job as well. And you absolutely 100% agree, Duck. We can't put too much pressure on Darcy Moore. I saw him play as a kid. He was a 10-possession forward, took some really nice marks. Ironically, his best footy I saw him play was at centre back. So he's going to take some time to develop, and we've got to let him develop.
Boys, time for a new segment, and it is called...
Gather round, boys and girls. It's story time with Rosie.
Story time. It is. Just relax at home.
I hope I don't put you all to sleep.
No, that's the type of segment we're after. We might be having a little hot chocolate or something at home now. We go back to the 2005 Grand Final, boys, which in the end the Sydney Swans won 58-54 over the West Coast in one of the great Grand Finals. And whenever you hear about this Grand Final, you hear about a Friday night gathering where the Swans gathered round, and this man in our room, Paul Roos, stood in front of them and apparently delivered a Churchillian-style speech swatter. This is what Jude Bolton had to say about it.
That was really powerful. I can still remember the way Roosie, put it to us. And I remember going to bed really confident about the way we're going to be because of the way Roosie spoke, and particularly alluding to just being bloods. And that's what we wanted to focus in on. Roosie will tell you it was the best speech of all time. But we had a really driven group, but he just knew how to harness that energy and power. And I guess it was more about the team first, which is exactly the way we wanted to play.
Now, Roosie, this type of thing fascinates me. Before you let the audience know what you spoke about, how do you go about preparing a grand final motivational speech?
Yeah, look, it's funny how some of them unfold. I guess the week is very different to being an interstate team. What happens in an interstate team? Obviously, you get in, so you can't prepare for it until you actually win the preliminary final. And then Monday and Tuesday is very much about organising tickets for family, everyone's got to get organised Monday and Tuesday. Then we sort of have our training session, and then you're coming down. So you're coming out of this environment, and Swatter alluded to it before. I mean, we probably had, I don't know, I'd be guessing, but we might have had 500 people training compared to, if Collingwood makes the grand final, or when you guys made the grand final, you're talking thousands and thousands. So you're in Sydney. It was a pretty big deal. But again, it's not the massive week that it is in Melbourne. So, you're training, you're preparing. And on one hand, that's really good. So you're able to get your tickets, get everything out, all the housekeeping early in the week, training, preparing. And then you jump on a plane, then you come to Melbourne, and suddenly you get to the the grand final parade, you know, and you, yeah, there's people everywhere and you know, a lot of Swans fans, a lot of Eagles fans. You jump in the car, you're driving. So you're going from this sort of relatively quiet, relatively normal preparation to this whack in the front of the whack in the front of the head sort of thing. So then you get to the hotel and there's still a lot of people around, you know, a lot of family coming in. And so you're really formulating what you're going to say over a period of time. And
are
you're
you
trying
writing it down?
Not really, no, no.
Are you practicing it?
My writing's terrible, so I can't read my own writing.
Do you stand in front of a mirror and have a crack at it or not?
No, no, it's just a Zen master.
I know. This is what I'm trying to figure out.
No, you're really trying to formulate in your own mind, to be perfectly frank. And you're trying to read the group and you run into a few players, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So really what I said to the boys was probably really getting back to what we're here for, because it is a big week and there's a big change from Sydney to Melbourne and then it whacks you in the ice. It's not, I don't know, we'll touch with the boys. Perhaps it's not the gradual build-up you have here in Melbourne, because you're in grand final week. Up there, it's like we're going along normally and then, whack, it's sort of. So we get to the team meeting on Friday night and I really just wanted to reinforce the players that it's still a game of football. You know, it's a grand final and I think there's this misconception, certainly the level of intensity, the level of speed, but it's still a grand final. And I think there's this misconception that you have to do something special on grand final day. And something I never subscribed to is this idea of big game is a big game player. What's a big game player? Yeah, it shouldn't matter whether you're playing, you know, at Marnica or you know, if you're prepared. And that was the message I wanted to get across to the players. This is a game of football. We were ready. Clearly, they're ready. Once you get to the grand final, you've done a lot of things right. And just reading the energy, and I think, you know, just I always really said to the players, we went over our game plan, and I said, look, I guarantee we'll win tomorrow. We'll win tomorrow if we play the way we do. So it was more just to reinforce to them, even though it's an abnormal week, and you know, we've come down here, and it's a grand final. Guys, play the way we played. Do the things that we want to do. And we will win. I guarantee we'll win. I think that was the last thing I said to them before they left the team meeting.
Did you walk away thinking, yep, Roosie, you've nailed that?
You don't actually do it for that, to be honest, because I think that the days of relying on these people ask me, the other thing asked me, oh, how do you motivate your players? If you need to motivate your players, you've got the wrong group of players, you know. So really what you're trying to do is actually give them a message, a clear message. Yeah, some of them might have fallen asleep. I don't know. It's good that you... but that's not the purpose of your speech. Your purpose of your speech is actually to give them a clear message on what you expect of them and you hope that they take something out of it. And to be fair to the early coaches that I had, I mean, there wasn't a lot of tactics. So a lot of it was around that fire and brimstone and getting you fired up to play, whereas with the modern game the way it is, you know, it's no good me firing up Duck and he runs out and... He gets the first three stoppages, he gets to the wrong spot and Swatter's kicking it. Yeah, he's not going in the corridor. So you're actually trying to give them a message about how the game's played.
But the Eagles beat you just 3 weeks beforehand, didn't they, in the qualifying final. So did you address that?
Well, we addressed that straight afterwards. It was sort of, again, it's an evolving discussion. You know, we were really disappointed after that game and I sensed the players were just, their heads were down, they were so flat. I said, yeah, I think I said to Mark that game, forget that game's finished. If I see anyone sulking, anyone moaning, you know, you might as well not play next week. So, you're just trying to read the mood of your players and try to give them clear messages along the way. And really was just sort of sending the bed with a clear message on that Friday night that don't think you have to go out and do something sort of spectacular. Yeah, the teams that win the grand final, and these guys have played in grand final, teams that win the grand final play pretty much the same way as they do during the year. You know, because I always sort of say this, generally your better players cancel each other out. You know, you might have six guns on one team, six guns, three guns will have a great game, three guns will have a quiet game. The guys that determine the outcomes of the grand final are your bottom six. Mm. They're the ones that are going to determine. So they need to feel comfortable when they're going to bed that all I have to do now is play my role within the team and my coach is confident in me. And if I do that, I think we can win this game.
Oh, Roosie, could you just have a chat to me and Schwatter maybe 5 minutes before the call today, Schwatter? We will just call the socks off this thing. What do you think of story time with Roosie, Dark?
Love it. Great insight. We don't often get to...
No, we don't. I think maybe that. Next week we need to go into the day Paul found out that it was all going to go south for Fitzroy Football Club. He's got so many stories. Story time with Roosie, I think it is a hit. Welcoming for the first time today to Mickey Roberts, Bob Jane T-Marts down on the boundary. G'day, Robbo.
Thanks, Howie, and I've got the coach with me, Brendan Bolton. Bolts, look, I read with interest there's no change from the selected side from the 43-point hammering against Richmond, and then no change this morning as well. So is it a case of second opportunity or believing in the players, just throwing it to them today?
Yeah, we want to make sure that our players trust us, and it's really important that we didn't make rash decisions on the back of one game. We knew that turnovers, particularly out of the back half, hurt us last week with our ball use and then defending behind it. So we want to give our guys another opportunity to respond.
I want to go to Daisy Thomas in the fact that massive support by Mick Malthouse today in the paper. But how have you handled Daisy? Because there's been sprinkling of criticism from the media and forms of the football world on Daisy's form. How have you handled his day today?
Oh, listen, just like usual, we review what worked, what didn't, why and why not. And we've done that with Daisy as well. And it's really important that players focus on that feedback and not the external. That can detract them from how to improve and progress. So it was pretty matter of fact.
Hey, Brendan, Wayne Swass here. What's your charter from the board? Is it to get as many games into as many of the kids as possible in your time this year and moving forward? Or is it a blend of doing that but also making sure there's a healthy balance of experience within the group each time you run out?
Yeah, hi, Wayne. When I went for the job, we were on a significant reset. We understood that, and it was about developing and exposing young talent. So in the last few years, we've done that as quick as we possibly can. But it's always a balance to make sure that in and around that we have enough experience. So we go out to try and win every game and compete, apply pressure, try and win every game. But at the same time, we've got to grow our depth through exposing our youngsters.
Hey, Brendan, obviously Wietering's been playing forward. It's only early in the year. Can you see him playing between the two roles, or are you going to persist with him forward for the year? Is that the plan?
No, I think we'll keep developing in both ends, but I think based on need in game, he really likes the opportunity to step up when it's counted. That type of personality likes to be the man, and when required up forward, he'll do that, and also down back. But just at the moment, we're playing him forward, and he'll start forward again today.
Brendan Roosie, mate. Look, we had a really good discussion about the Suns early on about building and developing a team and a culture. So, look, I hope the Carlton fans understand the journey you guys are on and the terrific job that you're doing, and particularly last year. And what was one thing, I guess, last week that you're probably disappointed? If you're talking about building for the future and building a game plan that's sustainable, one thing you're disappointed at and one thing you were really pleased that the kids were able to carry out?
Yeah, well, the most disappointing thing was the start. But also there was quite a few errors coming out of the back half, Roosie, and that was quite frustrating. And but we want our players to be bold. You can attack that and analyse it to death, but we just analyse the decision internally. Was it the right one? If it's an execution thing, don't get up too tight about it, because then they'll be scared to pull the trigger on those kicks. But didn't really like the start. And then the second part of your question is what did we like? We had a real crack in the third quarter. We won the third quarter. We won the inside 50s in the last, but not on the scoreboard. So these youngsters didn't give up, but were pretty frustrated with the start to give up 7 goals.
Yeah, I guess the other thing is the pre-season. Duck touched on it before. I mean, one pre-season can make a huge difference. So, yeah, it's really a developing team. And I was impressed with Jack Silvani. I've seen a bit of Jack play with my boy Tyler in the second. So it looked like... Yeah, you know, as naturally you would think, as the pre-seasons go on, you know, each player's going to get a bit better. I thought Jack looked fitter, looked stronger, looked bigger, but it's going to take a couple of years to develop these kids. But certainly a few of them, you know, started to look more comfortable at that level.
Yeah, they're all growing. I think Charlie Kernow will show some signs. Jack Silvani had 4 shots on goal last week. Samo Petreski's seat, and I think we can see his class. He's got a lot to learn about the game, but they're going to grow from week to week. But in saying that, there's 2 levels. We've got to be patient, but understand at the same time our standards internally. We challenge really hard if necessary, because if you don't, you can keep floating for a long time.
And I think that just for the listeners too, Bolts, just not underestimating the importance of having senior players around those young kids. I think there's this myth that exists in football that you throw all these young kids, you give them enough games, and then suddenly they blossom into these superstars. But I think some of your senior players are going to be really important too, aren't they?
Yeah, there's some guys in our Northern Blue side at the moment. Young Fisher, we know, has got talent. Harry Mackay's got talent. But if we go too far, this game's so brutal. So it's a real balancing act. So the roles of Gibbs, Murphy, Simpson, I know they're a little bit younger, but Cripps and Doherty are really important in and around our young crew. And they need to help develop the talent.
And after a significant loss, Bolts, I mean, normally we see some changes at the selection table. Can you tell us about your thinking behind sticking with the same side?
Yeah, back to the first question there. It was all about making sure that they trusted us, that we'll back them in. We didn't want to overreact on one game. But it's about consistency of effort, and we need that over four quarters today. Melbourne have been extremely tough on the inside, and you know, we need to match them in that area.
Hey, Brendan, I apologise if you've been asked this before, but I certainly haven't heard you talk about it. Bryce Gibbs clearly wanted to move to Adelaide. That didn't eventuate. He comes back in. It's not always an easy situation to reintegrate a player who was clearly set on going back home. How much time did you have to invest to make sure that he was happy, he was satisfied, and he was ready to commit himself back to Carlton as he has throughout his entire career?
Yeah, it was a little bit smoother than what the external probably thought it would be. For him and his family, he's got a young family. Both of them agreed to live close to their parents would be the easiest thing. There wasn't at all an issue with the footy club, and Adelaide put an offer to him late and he came to us late. But, yeah, we needed him in and around our youngsters. It's really important to understand that. And he came back with, it was in fantastic nick, actually. He was as fit as I've ever seen him, and he's been demanding out on the track. So there wasn't a real big issue internally. He loves the Carlton Footy Club.
Brendan Howard here. Just as we let you go, you've been answering questions about players and having losses, and it's a tough job. And we see coaches banging the coach's box and getting grey hair. Do you enjoy it? And what is fun about being a senior AFL coach in Melbourne, a big club especially?
Listen, it's the challenge to our club from building from where we were. We said it was a reset, so every week's a challenge, let it be out on game day, but also just build the club. So that's what we're in it for. But most importantly, it's just looking at the little wins that our players make as individuals and people off the field. We've been driving really strongly that our guys are engaged, not only as players, but footballers outside as well. So all those little steps of growth make us enjoy it. It's always a challenge, though. We always love living the emotional roller coaster. We keep coming back to it all the time, don't we?
Sure, you do. Best of luck today, Brendan. We appreciate your time. Well, good luck for the Blues.
Thanks, gents. Cheers. Thanks,
Brendan Bolton. Bolton from the Carlton Football Club. Boys, time for
the Sunday Rubs. What's caught your eye?
Oh. All right, we're going to go this way.
All right, so well, I've been waiting for this. We get the Sunday team assembled last week in Adelaide, right?
Mm.
We have a good game. We call it really well. And I love, it's like when you're a player, you're in a state and you're travelling, you're just hanging around with the guys, the pressure's off. You've got the W beside your name. You feel pretty good. So there's Clarkie, there's me, there's MJ, and there's Chew Man. And we're in this little bar at the Adelaide airport, and we're just having a quiet frothy. And Roosie, we did offer an Ouzo and Coke, but it was 5:30, so a little bit early for Roosie to hit the sauce.
Ouzo.
He wanders off. That's his favourite drink. He wanders off and gets a coffee. Now, there was another member of our group. Now, Roosie went and got his coffee, made a couple of phone calls. Me, Clarkie, Chewman and MJ just having a great talk, bonding together. The other member, we couldn't find him. We could not find him. And we were there for a good hour and a half, just sitting with the punters. We were just pressing the flesh. You know, how you going? Yeah, good, thanks. Good call. You're doing a great job. No problems. Paul Roos tells a few stories.
Who was missing?
Duck.
Oh, surprise, surprise.
Not even a phone message. He was sitting in Qantas Club, presidential lounge, just sucking back cronies, going, bugger these lots, I'm the king and I've got nothing more to do with these buggers.
What sort of tightwads are not Virgin members?
Didn't bother to send us a message for an hour and a half.
Didn't bring your mates in, Doug?
Didn't worry about us?
I did ask the question about an hour in, where were the dingbats? Because they're out there paying for their whatever they were drinking, and I was in there getting everything for free.
He makes a good point.
I couldn't work it out. And being a platinum flyer, I probably could have got a couple in with me. But,
Okay.
I did.
Jay-Z, what caught your eye this week?
Well, Daniel Hannabury says he spent the summer without having a beer. He hasn't had a drink since the grand final loss to the Bulldogs. And let's be honest, Roos, he's had a pretty slow start to the season. Daniel Hannabry, top five in the best and fairest for the past 2 years. You think perhaps it's time he maybe just sort of knocked the top off one, just had a cold one, just to get the mojo back. Do you believe in alcohol bans or what?
He's put it on himself.
Yeah, he did it himself. Look, I guess it's up to the player, really, isn't it? I'll ring Dan during the weekend.
Okay.
Have a chat to him.
Okay.
Very
good.
What did he say?
I did it once.
How'd it go?
Oh, stunk it up for the first half of the year. And the captain came up to me at a nightclub. He goes, mate, you're crap. Get back on the sauce. I followed his orders and I finished strong.
One of the most famous stories about that, and we don't promote drinking, by the way, but one of the most famous stories that I've heard is Ross Glendening after he won the Brownlow medal. He thought, okay, how do I, clearly I'm the Brownlow medalist. How do I now improve? What can I do to get better? And he thought one of the ways was to just a complete alcohol ban. Did not get near it the year
didn't
after.
Touch it.
Did not touch it.
So point,
he got
drink
back
responsibly,
on it.
Cool.
Now, something that we saw during the week, I was actually went to Riddles Creek, our very own Brian Taylor, who we know, does a lot of speaking events and everything else.
This has got sheets written all over it.
Well,
lots of sheets.
BT, and I've never seen this before and I couldn't believe it. And I know that his boys played at Riddles and he's from that area. And I noticed very quickly that they laughed at every joke of his. So he loves the area. But I could not believe my eye when I saw BT actually going into the kitchen and then walking out handing out meals.
Was he now?
Literally handing out meals, and I went, wow, I've never seen, never, ever, ever seen that before. I don't think I'll ever, ever see it again. I could not believe my
man
eyes.
Of the people.
Man of the people. Man of the people.
I like
going
it.
Into
I
the
like
kitchen,
it.
Two plates, walking out, handing them out. So, well done, BT.
Roosie, what caught your eye this week?
Well, before I came to the football yesterday to call the game, I went to the VAFA, Elstonwick Park, for a women's football round robin competition. My young son Tyler's fiance Monique, she played in the game. She's just started up the game. There was 12 teams, Duck, I believe.
Yeah.
Great, fantastic it was. Really good standard football. As I said, she had never played before. She went really well. It was fantastic, and I loved it. I spoke to the South Melbourne girls were there, and they had their South Melbourne jumpers on swatter. Outstanding. Loved it. Come to the footy. Oh, fantastic it was.
There you go. Howie, what about you?
Well, as you know, I spent a week last weekend at the Grand Prix. You know what caught my eye? I sat down one-on-one with Lewis Hamilton, who is a man that has a great deal of personality.
Name dropping.
I can't help it. These are the circles I roll in, Doug. I can't help this. Lewis Hamilton.
Hang on,
sat
is this
down.
What's caught your eye, or this can is, I drop a name?
I'll tell you what
the name of this
eye?
Segment, Doug?
I'll tell you what caught my eye, Roosie, and maybe leave the funny stuff to me, but I know what you're doing there. What caught my eye interviewing Lewis Hamilton, he had on $570,000 worth
of jewellery.
Of jewellery.
Yeah.
Now, that caught my
eye.
Yeah,
okay, that's fair.
And
that's
to fair. Further go on from that, I think we need a bit more showtime in the AFL. I think I've heard enough of structures and processes and talking myself down.
You want bling?
I want bling. Yep. I want showtime. I want entertainment. And if I kick 10, I don't want to say it was my midfielders that got it down to me. I want to hear I was bloody good today.
Yep. How did your other interview go too while you're talking about the Grand Prix? Obviously, Lewis had a chat to you. But what about the great BMX bandit? Star actor.
I had an issue with Nicole Kidman. She got out of her big black car, and I said to her security, can I speak to her? And he said, yes, no problem. Of course you can. Just ask two questions. So she get out, and there's paparazzi everywhere, Paul, and I'm always quite polite. So I said, Nicole, do you mind if I ask you a question? She actually said, no problems, darling. That's what she said to me, no problems, darling. So I go with my first real hard-hitting one about, gee, you must be happy to be back in Australia. And old mate security put me through the back fence.
No, there's a lack of communication between Nicole and the security guard.
I was communicating. She was communicating. The big gorilla, the 600 pounds of him, was not communicating. So anyway, it didn't go so well. But thanks for bringing that up, Swatter.
Right.
Around the grounds, quickly.
It's the Kangaroos by 13 points. 1 minute left in the second quarter over Geelong, Howie.
You didn't bounce back, Howie?
No. I pulled myself up out of the hydrangeas. And all 70 kilos I've been just scurried off, Ducky boy. Boys, what? I am very happy to announce it is time for a new segment.
Really?
The Sunday Rubs.
Oh, back to school.
Back to school quiz.
to school.
The back to school quiz. So the way this works, boys, I will ask you a series of questions. Now, you need to get in with your buzzer,
what
which
topics?
Is your name. All topics.
Maths, what do you mean?
Geography, all sorts of things like that. You've got to test your buzzers. You've got to use your name a couple of times. So, Swatter, you'd be going...
Swatter.
A couple of times.
Swatter.
That's right. Jay-Z, test your buzzer.
Jay-Z.
Jay-Z. Duck.
Duck, duck.
That's it. That's what I'm after.
Do you get a point for that? Roosie.
You get a point for a correct answer. You don't lose a point if you get it wrong, and we have a rolling leaderboard throughout the season.
Can we get interaction here on what our loyal fans and listeners think of the quality of this new seg?
We can if it's positive.
Yeah.
If it's negative, I'm not interested.
You need to vet everything, MJ.
Okay, here we go. Hands on buzzers. We're starting with geography. Which junior... Look, don't cross your arms, boys. Relax. Okay,
very
relax.
Negative.
All right, geography. Which junior football club produced Brendan Favola, Adam McPhee, Matthew Boyd, Trent Crowd, and Tom Scully?
Oh, Jay-Z.
Jay-Z.
Somewhere in the Dandenong Stingrays catchment.
Yes. Narrow it a bit more.
Geez, that's specific. I'll go with somewhere in Australia.
Yeah. That is not correct. Has anyone got a closer answer to that? That was too wide for you?
Nope.
No?
No? I don't know.
Oh, we're off to a good start.
All right. It is Narre Warren Football Club. Oh, no one gets a point.
Wow.
Maths. What is Braden Maynard's number?
Swatter.
Oh, Swatter 7. Yeah.
He nearly broke his glasses.
Swatter. Very good.
Well, you're tapping your buzzer, Swatter.
I don't know. I've always wanted to be on a game show.
Now, a mass bonus round.
I was on perfect math.
Oh, yes.
Okay, keep going.
All right. Do you want me to? No, I won't. Okay.
I did win the date.
And how did it turn out for you, Duck?
What?
The date.
It was good.
What was her name?
Can't remember.
The maths bonus round. How many goals did Cameron Mooney kick in the 2007 grand final?
Duck.
Jay-Z.
Duck got in first.
Five.
Yes, Ducker. Well done. Point to Ducky boy. Okay, this next bit, we're going to use a bit of audio. The player's name, I want you to name the player. Their name will be blocked out in the call. Here we go.
To the ground and off a stand.
Oh, Banana! Duck.
Bargerah!
Oh, Eddie Betts.
No, it's the 2015 grand final. I'll play it once more.
What? Ruse.
Or Rusey.
Malcheski?
No, it is not Nick Malcheski. We'll play it once more for you if our boy's back in the studio.
To the ground and off a stand.
Oh, Banana!
Bargerah!
Ruse. Luke Hodge.
Yes, Hodge is the answer. That is not your name.
To the ground and off a stand. Banana! Bargerah!
That is the actual call of Luke Hodge in the 2015 grand final from the very pocket down here. Swatter 1, Duck 1, Jay-Z 1. Roosie's here, but not on the scoreboard at this stage. History. Which two teams played in the VFL grand final of 1983?
Ruse.
Roosie.
Essendon Hawthorn.
Yes, Roosie's on the board.
Damn, Roosie. I was the only one that was alive there.
So
I was one.
We've all got 1 point. There is one question to go, so whoever gets this right takes the initial lead on the school quiz leaderboard. Who is speaking in the next audio grab?
Landed on his arm and has broken.
Jay-Z got it first.
Oh,
Jay-Z
what?
Got it first.
No way. Hang on. We got a replay of that. Hang on.
He didn't say it
twice. We must have a replay of that. Hang on.
He didn't say it twice.
We got a replay of...
Duck's all serious. He did not say it twice.
Hang on.
Bernie Vince is here. Hang on, Bernie. Come in.
Bernie, come in.
Bernie can adjudicate.
Who said Duck or Jay-Z?
Oh, I was in first.
No, shut up, Roosie. Was it Duck or Jay-Z?
Robbo.
All right, now, we've heard from the adjudicators.
No,
we've heard from Fran upstairs.
Listen.
Jay-Z got in first,
yes.
But only said his name once.
Yes.
So,
no.
Duck got his name in twice. Who said it for the whole...
Johnny Longmire.
Ducky wins. Round one takes out the points.
Chibbed.
Wayne Carey.
Rigged.
1. Everyone else, 0.
At Triple M Footy, do you want to see that comeback next week or should we just give that the Tijuana brass?
That was magnificent.
We need to get some buzzers.
Bernie Vince.
Yeah, buzzers is the game.
Real buzzers.
And a new pair of glasses.
Yep. Doug, are you happy with the way the quiz went?
Yep.
Are you happy with the way the buzzers worked?
Yep.
Very much so.
Robbo's not happy.
Bit easier to go.
We should have got Robbo involved.
He sold more fridges than Westinghouse on Sale of the Centuries did our man Robbo.
He did.
Yep.
This man has joined us for the first time in season 2017, Bernie Vince. G'day, Bernie.
G'day, boys. How are we?
Great to see you. Before we get into the serious stuff, when you go one-on-one with your ex-coach and have a crack with the duck, etc., we just had a new segment which is blown up, and next week we're going to try and do it live on Facebook, the back-to-school quiz. Now, Bernie, what you needed to do to get the deciding answer correct, you needed to say your name twice. There was a lot of controversy. Jay-Z said he claimed it. Duck said he claimed it. This is the replay.
Landed on his arm and it's broken.
Oh,
Jesus. Roosie's got his hand in his head. I didn't even hear you, Roosie. I want to hear it again.
Go
silence.
Land on his arm and it's broken.
Roosie!
Oh, I reckon Duck was
Did Roosie say it twice, though?
I don't think it was Duck.
I don't think Roosie said it
twice. One more
time. Absolute farce this segment is.
Hang on, Roosie.
Let's go to the tape again. What a farce.
Land on his arm and it's broken.
Roosie! Can we have an apology?
Bernie, who was it?
I think it was actually Roosie.
Righto! Duck, you've just lost a point. Yeah, Roosie!
Hang on. It was Roosie, but you'd given it to me. You'd made the wrong decision, Howie.
Oh, DRS, Duck. We've gone to the DRS, Virat Kohli style. So, Roosie, you lead the back-to-school quiz 1-0. I'm just sort of a bit physically threatened by you, Duck. That's why I go with that.
Roosie couldn't give it a... you know what.
And then he jumped on board.
About the quiz, because he didn't really fight for the...
Then he got old Captain Competitive. Talking about Captain Competitive, you're not playing today, Bernie, and we can't say it was due to an injury. What exactly occurred last week? The MRP didn't side with you, it must be said.
Yeah, I just got a bit caught up in the moment and just sort of clipped Nathan Wright, I think it was, from St Kilda. And yeah, it cost myself a week. I didn't think there was too much in it at the time, but then looking back, there's not too much we could have argued because he went off and actually had a concussion test after it. So, yeah, it was a bit disappointing.
You can't say it, but it was a clip behind the ear once again, and that's all it looked like. It just looked like a little clip behind the ear. Once again, because he went off for the concussion test, that's what cost you. So you've just got to make sure, if you hit someone in this game, make sure you hit someone with a hard head.
Yeah, I'm going to target the
tough
players.
That's as simple as that. And guys that don't, so don't hit Selwood or any of those. He splits too easy, so he's a bleeder, so you'll get weeks for that. But if you hit someone like when Rioli hit young Oliver last year, and he just bounces up, Rioli doesn't get anything because...
I reckon it's a good discussion point for perhaps another time because should it be predicated... I mean, obviously, injuries that are resulting directly from a big four should be taken into consideration. But I 100% agree. I think we've gone too far with medical reports. The incident should be the incident.
That's right.
Not the outcome.
That's what you should have done, Bernie. You should have called Ruse and Duck in to defend you, and you would have been playing today.
I will next time.
And Swatter, because I saw it. I don't think it's worthy of a one-week suspension. Do you think, though, some of your past indiscretions make you... effectively a person of interest compared to other players who may do the same thing but they don't get the scrutiny or the suspension?
Yeah, possibly. I had a few close calls the year before, as Roosie would know, and cost myself a week last year as well. But he actually, when he came off, it plays a part in it, him doing the concussion test, but he actually passed it. So, but because he had the test, I couldn't argue because he's obviously got hit in the head. So I said, do we have an argument because he passed it? And we didn't because he'd actually had the test. That was the big part of it. So, priors, I'm not sure. I don't think that comes into account. But, they seem to look at a lot of my incidences for some reason. I don't know why.
On to something more positive. You must have been pleased with how you played, playing off half-back, composure, used the footy really well.
Yeah, we probably lacked a bit of composure early on, game was really quick. So, just tried to get the ball in my hands a bit and got some really good guys around me as well. Jordan Lewis was really good in those situations and just like takes the speed out of the game a little bit. And you feel like without actually scoring, you actually feel like you got a bit more control back in the game when you've got the ball. So, and you don't have to defend when you've got the ball. So you can have a bit of a spell and then attack more when you have got it. So, I think some key guys stood up in that little patch and got the game going into quarter time. I think we were down by a bit, but then we were really calm and we knew what would get us back in. And Goody was really clear with his messaging. So, we found ourselves back in it really quickly.
Well, it's interesting, Bern, because we've had a discussion around the Suns and we've just had Brendan Bolton on. I mean, you've seen a team evolve over a four-year period. It doesn't happen overnight, does it?
No.
What's the thing that you feel the team has worked and jumped up round one? It's only round one, but the evolution from last year to this year. And I thought your ball use was exceptional. Jordan Lewis makes a massive difference, and you've touched on a little bit. What do you see as the next step from last year's team to this year's team?
Yeah, well, I think it's been highly publicised that, you know, our aggression and contested ball stuff that's been evolving over that sort of four-year period, as you mentioned. But I think it is our ball use, and it's the composure, the right times to go quick and the right times to take the sting out of the game a little bit when a team's coming pretty hard at you and the game's being played at that frenetic pace. Just to get into some senior guys' hands and just play a bit of composure footy, and that's what Goody's been big on. We've practiced it all throughout the pre-season, just taking the speed out, because every team, and you interview anyone from any other team, all they want to do is, and everyone says they've been working on it, is playing with as much speed as they can and moving the ball really quickly. So we know we're going to come up against it every team we play. So we've practiced a lot on how to negate that and how to, you know, get the ball back in our hands and take a bit of this thing out of the play.
And I think we talked about Etihad, boys, and we discussed it. You can get caught up in a real foot race at Etihad, and that's probably one of the reasons why we haven't had that much success, Melbourne, because it tends to get up and back. But I felt that was the biggest difference last week, just the ability to spread St Kilda's defence. And it's interesting you should say that, because there is a little bit of a misconception around it. Everyone's got to play fast footy. I think it's a team... Essendon did it really well last night when they got challenged, and I thought Melbourne did it fantastically well last week where they just kept the ball off St Kilda.
Yeah, well, a big strength of ours also is that long contest stuff. So especially early on, was real short, quick contest. So we're very good at the contest, so we need players to be able to have time to rock up at the contest. So those quick ones, we don't get there in time, and teams can move it really quickly. So just to take a bit of sting out of the game sometimes and go sort of long down the line when we can and get some contests starting to happen, that's where we turned the game back in our favour last week.
What about Watsy's pre-season, Bernie? Did you ever sense that he was coasting a bit or in third gear? Or did you ever talk to him about that, or did anyone at any stage over the summer?
Yeah, he came back and, you know, his skin folds were up slightly, but he was still running quite well and train. He's a very good trainer, Watsy, with ball in hand. So it wasn't up. It was purely a selection thing in the end. And we got some guys in some really good form coming into our JLT game one. So unfortunately, he was the guy that missed out, and it was purely selection. It wasn't so much, you know, a few guys came back with his skin folds up and around that mark that we don't like. So they were all back in good shape by the time we started playing. So
I know some of the clubs call them fat camp. Well, what is that actually like? So what does it mean? Extra sessions to get it down, or you have to, you diet, or what does that mean when you are?
It means a bit of both. You've got to get back in good shape as quick as you can. And there's no point coming back in a condition where you're not, can't train at your best. So things get taken away from you. You got to train extra. You got to make sure your diet's right. So, and you let basically what it is, it's you're letting your teammates down, because everyone's done all the work, and if you haven't, it's a bit of a letdown. So, but I'm not saying Watsy did that. As I said, he's a great trainer, so he's training really well. It's just he wasn't good enough to make our JLT one series first game. So, worked really hard and got back in our team, played a good game at Casey, and was back in now.
What is a little bit up these days in the skin folds? I know back in the day, Byron Pickett used to come back at sort of a
swallowed a fridge.
140. 140. Is it still the same? Is it like seven sights? Generally, you've got to be at least under 50.
Yeah.
Choppy, as I said, came back at 140.
you want to say that again if he's listening, Doc?
And a few others. So what is a little bit over these days? Are we talking sort of 60, 70? Is that what?
No, same thing now. So it's around 50. And I think Watsy was right on 50. So when I'm saying
he was on 50, yeah, and that's considered
right
up now.
So, yeah, and there's a real strict, I guess consensus around the club that that's where we need to be at, and that's what the dietitian said, fitness staff.
So had to come back under 50, and then obviously you train into getting as low as you can.
Yeah, in saying that, a lot of guys are around that mark when you come back, because you've just had a lot of time off. It's just the main thing is running times and training standards, intensity and training. You can tell when someone hasn't done enough work. But as I said, Watsy's always a really good trainer and a reasonably good runner. So, he's fine. He just, as I said, it was purely he didn't make a first team on selection.
Bernie, I think sometimes from the outside looking in, we don't realise how disciplined the modern AFL footballer is. Who is elite as far as their diet at the Melbourne Football Club, and what does elite mean as far as diet goes?
Yeah, I'd have to say Jack Viney. He's probably the ultimate professional in a footy club.
So what does he do and what won't he do as far as putting things in his body?
Yeah, he doesn't drink during the season. I've heard rumours, I think we just stir him up about this, that he weighs his food and stuff like that. But
right.
I don't think he actually goes to that degree. But he's just the ultimate professional, does all the extras, trains really hard. Recovery-wise, it ticks all the boxes. So,
and what's the one thing for you, if I put it in front of you now, food-wise, that you really find hard to resist, Burn?
I don't really resist food. I just eat it and deal with it later. So just make sure I do a little bit extra training. Okay.
Just on Jack then, Bernie, were you surprised that he was named co-captain? I mean, did you vote for him as captain?
No, well, the thing is, that was a decision made by Goody. He was a clear standout.
You got overruled by the coach.
Oh, no, I didn't say I didn't want him. We voted as a whole team. We do that every year for our leadership group. Those two were the clear standouts in our vote.
I think there's also a misconception, Bern, that the players vote, even though player X will have more votes, it's not like the players are voting for the captain. They're voting for the leadership group.
Yeah.
And then most of the time, the coaches actually pick the captain. So there's this misconception that the players vote, and then at every club, the guy that gets the highest vote is the captain. So that's actually certainly in my experience at Sydney and my experience at Melbourne, was we want the players' input, but it's not like all the time.
The be-all and end-all.
Yeah, the be-all and end-all of it. We need to know who the players respect.
Yeah, it's exactly right. Nathan Van Bell, I don't reckon, got the most votes when he was captain at Adelaide, but we used to vote as well. It's a coach's call, and Goody felt that was the best look for our footy club, is to have both of them as captain and some really good leaders under them. I'm talking myself up there. but it's important for a footy club to have a strong leadership group, and it's probably something that was lacking going back 4 years. Really good. And it's all about, for me, it's mainly about game day performances from those leaders. And, you know, you couldn't get a better two game day leaders than those two to lead your footy club. And, you know, they really lead by example and really lead from the front. And I love running out behind them, both of them.
Footy in 2017 is all about team defence. We now have dedicated ruckman. Third man up is gone. Do you think that one of the evolutions of the game this year may be with a player like you've got, a Maxi Gawn, who can dominate centre clearances and stoppages around the ground and give service to people like yourself and those other good midfielders at Melbourne? Do you think teams will start to drift back towards having dedicated taggers to midfielders that might be just off the chain?
Yeah, well, it seems like it's sort of getting more and more out of the system, isn't it, in the AFL? We sort of did a little bit myself a few years ago, ran with different players. Don't want to bring that one up, but that was your fault, Ruzi. I keep getting blamed for that, and you told me to do that.
Hang on, what did you tell him to do, Ruzi? What was that?
No, he was supposed to play on Rory Sloane. He just went to Dangerfield.
I said, no, I want him. it's slowly getting weaned out of the... you can't really lose a player to just tagging. Gone are those days, I think. It's more about, you know, going to someone maybe and trying to hurt them the other way as much as you can.
But what happens if you're against a player and you can clearly see, you've played the game long enough, you can see a guy is absolutely dominating, and because of what he's able to do when he's got the ball, it's influencing the game and shifting momentum.
Yep.
Will you always default back to, no, it's got to be team defence, or can you make a decision with or without the coach's blessing to go, no, we've got to shut this guy down for at least 3 minutes?
Yeah, well, I think that's probably where it's got to. If someone's actually getting off the chain, we'll mention it at quarter time, or the coaches will come down and mention it at quarter time, or the runner will come out and say, you know, he's had this many, he's having a real impact, can you just quieten him down for a little period? And then you'll sort of call it off once you've quietened him down a bit. But I don't think you can, as I said, lose a player to just tagging now these days, because you're automatically down to 17 men on the field. So you can sometimes still do it, is run with someone and try and sort of hurt him the other way. But yeah, you don't want to lose a player.
And generally it's midfield versus midfield a bit, isn't it? So you can lock on them at stoppages, and you'll see that a little bit. But I guess in terms of that, the evolution of the Melbourne midfield, the depth when you first arrived, which was probably minimal compared to what it is now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge difference. And also, I thought Christian Salen last week was a really, really important player after half time.
Yeah, certainly. Christian's been awesome. He's got real flexibility as well. When Joel Smith went down with that shoulder really early on last week, he just drifted to the half-back line and really helped us out. Another guy with really good composure and control when he's got the footy. So we've got a lot of guys that can rotate now through half-forward, half-back, midfield, wing. So if one guy's getting, you know, locked down or hasn't really been involved, he can roll to half-forward, roll to a wing, roll to half-back and get in the game. And that's what all the good teams have done over the last sort of 5-10 years. So we're hoping we can get to that level.
Bernie Vince is with us on the Sunday Rub. Just before we let you go, Bernie, round of applause. Bernie got engaged, well, I think, quite recently. What's her name, the beautiful lady? And can you tell us how it actually happened, Bernie?
Yeah, it was, her name's Abby.
Right.
And I just took it. It was Christmas Day, actually, Christmas morning. I told her I was going down to do some extra recovery and that she should come. She should have picked up on that because I've never, ever done extra recovery. And I still didn't get in the water. But, yeah, I didn't actually get down on one knee. Just asked her, opened it up the wrong way too, so I flicked the box around and she said yes, and that was that.
And basically, you recently very casually asked Big Tex to be your best man. You said you were pretty casual about that.
Yeah, yeah, things are pretty casual with me normally, so that was no difference. Yeah, just asked him. We went for lunch, I think, when he was over playing in the JLT series. And I said, I've been meaning to ask you too. You want to be my best man? You probably think you are already. He'd already told a few people, I think, that he was, and I hadn't asked him. So.
And you've gone into the real estate business.
Yeah.
Are you expecting to sell houses or apartments with that moustache?
Yeah, I have. So
have you?
I might as well continue it.
So what's the business if we want to buy something?
Yeah,
the way from
Pride
Bernie?
Pride Real Estate Pram we are. So we've franchised out ourselves. And yeah, it's been really good. The
are you front
fine.
Of office? Are we seeing you? Are we dealing with you if we're buying a house?
Yeah, mate, I am.
I get an email every week.
Yeah, really?
I do, yeah.
Really?
Well, you must think I've got some money, but I haven't.
Rosie only deals with 5 million plus, so good commissioning, though.
Yeah. Bernie, we appreciate you coming in, mate. We look forward to seeing you out on the ground next week, and best of luck with the upcoming wedding and with the new real estate business.
No worries. Thanks, guys. Well, thanks,
Adam. Burn.
This is where you start to really lift your rating, Jay-Z, and dominate yourself.
This is Jay-Z's Big Three.
Did you like that sting?
Ooh, a little sting. What was that?
I like it. Hey, the umpiring has been a huge talking point this weekend. I heard the Zen master here, Paul Roos, called the Paul Puopolo decision yesterday the worst umpiring decision or worst free kick he has seen in football. Now we
full stop.
That's what he said, Roos. Wow. Is that right? Am I making that up? Or you were a bit unhappy
you're
with
you're
it?
Prone to making bold statements on the, but I can't think of a worse one. Put it that way.
So it was
or it'd be equal to as bad
yeah,
as
I said
equal
the
as bad as what
yeah.
I've seen.
I said yeah. It was deplorable.
So it's Paul Puopolo with the ball, and yeah. David McKay yep. from Adelaide, I think, tackled him and then ended up on his back. Now made contact with the AFL umpiring department, and I think you'll find in the next couple of days that they'll say that that possibly could have been a ball up, or if not, a free kick Adelaide's way for holding the ball on Paul exactly. Puopolo. So I don't think the umpiring fraternity necessarily agreed with the umpire on that one, so we should see that be corrected. Of course, there was a Callum Mills decision on Thursday night too, Friday night, which got the tongues wagging because he was pinged for that deliberate rush behind rule with Liam Picken bearing down on him. Now, what we're going to see here, fellas, and this is quite interesting, I think, when the players are close to ball and the defender is chasing that player who's about to be in possession, why don't they? And Liam Picken did a bit of this the other night. He backed away. He took his foot off the accelerator, so there wasn't the intense pressure on Callum Mills as he rushed the ball over the line. So is it clearly he won the free kick? So, but do we want that for the game? You know, do we want the defender sort of taking the foot off the accelerator and easing that pressure to try and expose that player as he knocks the ball over the line?
My question is more around, do we want that free kick determining a grand final? I think that's part of the problem with the rules at the moment. It's easy to make a determination, but we've already seen, we're 2 weeks in, and we've already seen players exploiting these two new rules. Liam Picken, really smart, backs off. We've seen the third up rule, Grigg versus young Maynard. Yep. I was here yesterday when Rioli nominated himself when Vickery was at a ruck contest, and you could see Sam Jacobs went to Vickery, Rioli went third man up. So because teams are full-time, they're always in front, if you like, just of the umpiring department. And that's why the rules need to be thought through way more clear. I'm not critical of the umpires. I think, Swatty, you made the point as well. We're not critical of the umpires. No. So let's be really clear on this, because I think it's really important for junior umpires. The game has become very, very difficult to umpire. It's a set of interpretations, not a set of rules. It's the laws of the game committee that should get smashed, not the umpires.
Who's Juddy? That's Juddy's department. He's on that, isn't he, as well? And last night we saw in the St Kilda-West Coast game, 8 free kicks to 23 versus West Coast. We see West Coast get a lot of free kicks over there at Subiaco Oval. But moving on, Ruzi, your name is going to bob up this week a lot because you are the Zen master and you're sharp as a tack. You're all over the tactics at the moment. And clearly to me, exhibiting the football passion, I don't think that's left you. Do you feel as if you could senior coach again? Do you think there is another senior coaching chapter in you?
No, because I think I said it. I mean, the emotion involved in coaching, like I love coming in and talking about football, and we're all fortunate to be in the industry, to be honest. It's a great industry to be in. It's healthy. It's vibrant. I mean, it's great to be able to come to the football and talk about it. But the coaching's another level. I mean, you see Rocket go through what he went through yesterday. Yeah, you can already tell when we're talking to Bolts, you know, even though they've got a plan, it's sort of, they start to get a bit jumpy and a bit nervous. And I'm confident in the Carlton Footy Club, you know, and the people behind that, they'll be able to do it. But you can sort of see, you know, the difficulties of coaching. You have to be all in. You can't be, yeah, you can't be 80% or 90%. So, look, I'm loving what I'm doing and I can't see myself doing it again.
What's the main thing you miss from it? I'm sure there's lots of things, Paul, you don't miss, but what's the one thing that you miss?
Oh, clearly, I mean, winning is the thing you miss. You know, that's the rooms after the game, you know, particularly, I mean, I love winning at Melbourne. I love Sydney winning a premiership, but that Melbourne had been down on its knees. I mean, to see Jack Watson, to see Nathan Jones, and you know, when we beat Hawthorn last year out here and kicked the last 5 goals, I mean, there's nothing else in your life. And I say that there's different things in your life, you know, in terms of getting married, having kids, but in terms of the competitiveness and what we're involved in, if you're involved in football, there's some things in football you can't really replace. And that's winning. Yeah, you know, winning with a group of young kids and winning with, you know, putting plans in place. But there's a lot of things you don't like. So for all the, I think Lee Matthews made a great call. The best coaches in the league lose every third week. I mean, 66% is a pretty healthy win-loss. So, yeah, there's a lot of downtime. But you have to be completely 100% emotionally attached. Well,
I think we saw that competitiveness when your made us go to the videotape, yep, as you called it, in the school quiz, just quietly.
Hey, we're only a round and a half in, Ruzi. How many times do you reckon Jay-Z's going to ask you that question?
No, we discussed that. I've given him one chance.
I think you burn it very early.
You burn it early. That's all right. He might ask it in a different way, though.
Yeah, that's it. They're very smart at that.
You could be a man in demand, Ruzi, I'm tipping. You talked about the Collingwood midfield and some unaccountability earlier. What's flying under the radar, fellas, is Tommy Liberatore. He played his 100th game on Friday night. He's notched 30 tackles in his first two rounds this season, 16 on the weekend, and now owns the record for 2 of the top 4 pressure acts since 1999, since Champion Data's been keeping records. Again, another 44 pressure acts on the weekend. Duck, I know he's not a guy who necessarily likes the media or is in the spotlight or freewheeling offensively, but how much respect do you have for Tommy Liberatore and his team ethos?
Oh, he's sensational. I think he's been sensational from the time he got there. Obviously had a little hiccup off the ground, but since then, and considering he's had a knee reco as well, to come back like he has, he's remarkable. And the funny thing about the Bulldogs is they're all like that. I don't know whether they've deliberately gone out, and you know, some of them are, you look at Caleb Daniel and Dale House and, you know, Mitch Wallace when he's in there, they're all dogged. They all go about it the same way. He's obviously, his tackling is just brilliant. And I wonder where he got that from. His old man wasn't bad at it.
He was very good.
I reckon his dad might have been running around tackling him as a young tacker. But no, he's good. He's good to watch. And I'm glad you brought him up because he probably doesn't get the accolades that he deserves. And probably because that's more of a focus than, you know, Bontempelli that does the flashy things. That's... But he's every bit as important to the Bulldogs as what Bontempelli is to the Bulldogs.
I reckon that's a great point, Duck, because what we see externally, when you come to watch a game of footy, you generally see, I mean, everyone sees the goals and everyone sees, you know, the pure Paul Puopolo mark and the things that are really obvious to everyone. What you don't know, and that's why it can be hard to talk about a lot of other clubs internally, is you don't know. I guarantee he would be as valued as Bontempelli at that football club.
Really?
Because of what he does, because of what he goes about it. But we don't get to see, you know, Bontempelli at 29 or
30.
Is it 30? Yeah.
It's outstanding.
It's not as obvious as what Liberatore does. Sorry, Liberatore is not as obvious as what Bontempelli does, but internally in that football club, he would be extremely well valued.
Just to pick up on something that Duck mentioned before, is that Liber has had a significant issue with regards to something he did a few years ago. It's sort of getting off track a little bit, but the hysteria around the Jordan Degaui lying situation, what you've got to remember sometimes is these are 21-year-old kids. He lied. He made a mistake. But the response from the footballing public and some of the media was ridiculously out of kilter. The kids made a mistake. So did Liberatore. He went away, did his penance. He's come back. He's a premiership player. We're now lauding him for what he's doing on a football field. Sometimes we just need to accept these kids are football players. They'll make mistakes. But sometimes the best learning opportunities come from having to accept the responsibility of when you made a bad mistake. Bulldogs didn't kick Tom out, nor should they. Collingwood didn't kick Jordan Degaui out, nor should they. Accept the fact that they make mistakes, but give them the opportunity to learn from those and become better people and better players.
Well said.
Very nice big three, too, by you, Jay-Z. I can see your mind ticking over. You're trying to figure out how to turn Ruzy's quote to say, into Ruzy.
Ruzy gave him three lead stories last week.
That's it.
We did say Zach Merritt, he would have taken him number two in the draft, and he was absolutely outstanding.
He said number
last
one
night.
In the draft. And did you notice when Ruzy answered that, just body language, he looked left?
Yep.
Might be a little porky pie.
Triple M rocks footy.